On the 14th of May, 1897, John Philip Sousa and his band of 50 musicians arrived in Philadelphia, where they were scheduled to begin a series of three concerts at the Academy of Music. These appearances by the ensemble, perhaps the most celebrated in America, coincided with the arrival of William McKinley. Both the American president and the American March King were in town to celebrate the dedication of Rudolph Zimmerling's new George Washington statue in Fairmount Park. By 1897, Sousa was well known to Philadelphia audiences, and these concerts marked his third visit of the season. But his May engagements would be special. For Philadelphia, Sousa had written a new march. Throughout his 40-year career as leader of one of America's most successful touring organizations, Sousa often worked to attach his compositions to events of local or national importance. The Washington Post for an 1889 competition held by the newspaper, the Liberty Bell for the 1893 tour of that American icon, a Century of Progress march for the 1933 World's Fair in Chicago. Such timely titling was a sure way to drum up interest, improve ticket sales, and guarantee the success of sheet music, which was often decorated with lavish images designed to make the connection all the more obvious. The 1897 Philadelphia performances provided yet another opportunity to have a new march advertised in the press, fawned over by the public, and succeed in the marketplace. And so, a week before the first concert, Sousa promised Philadelphians a reward for their faithful patronage. Mr. Sousa's latest march will be given, the name of which, by arrangement with his publisher, cannot be announced until the 14th of May. Of this, Mr. Sousa writes that it is the greatest of his career. Following the Philadelphia premiere, reviews suggest that Sousa's strategy was successful. His new march, The Stars and Stripes Forever, was stirring enough to rouse the American Eagle from his crag and set him to shriek exultantly while he hurls his arrows at the Aurora Borealis. Sousa later explained that he composed The Stars and Stripes Forever in his mind while traveling aboard the White Star liner Teutonic from Liverpool to New York. The pencil piano draft was finished shortly after his arrival, and Sousa dated it Christmas Day, 1896. A full score for band was completed several months later. From this moment in April, 3 weeks remained until the Philadelphia concert, an interval that left plenty of time to copy out band parts and submit a score for copyright. Over the course of these 19 days, however, the Sousa Band played 31 concerts in nearly as many cities. Not a single evening was left dark, and only a handful of afternoons lacked matinees, no doubt to accommodate the band's travel. Such hectic touring was, of course, typical for Sousa's ensemble. Between its formation in September of 1892 and Sousa's death in March of 1932, the band played 15,623 concerts as it traveled from New York to San Francisco, from Montreal to New Orleans, and from St. Joseph to Johannesburg. Such a schedule left little opportunity for rehearsal, and when travel is factored into the band's itinerary, it's hard to see where they could have found time away from an audience or train car to prepare the Stars and Stripes Forever for its official premiere on May 14, 1897. All this according to Patrick Warfield. A lesson can be drawn, Warfield says, from this story of a march promised, a march written, and a march sort of premiered. The great wind band conductor Frederick Fennell once cited the Stars and Stripes Forever as an example of Sousa's layer cake construction. Fennell was referring to Sousa's thrice-repeated trio, which is heard first only with its principal melody and accompaniment, then with an added piccolo obbligato, and finally with a trombone counter melody. The piccolo obbligato and the trombone counter melody from The Stars and Stripes Forever by John Philip Sousa, and that from Patrick Warfield in the Journal of the American Musicological Society in 2011. We're about to meet the trombonist who will perform that counter melody as the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic celebrates the Independence Day holiday with concerts in Scranton and in Wilkes-Barre, while members of the brass section take the festivities on the road. Jason Stein is a trombonist and a teacher. He's been a member of the Civic Orchestra of Chicago. He's performed with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, including a tour to Carnegie Hall, and most recently in Millennium Park, celebrating Riccardo Muti's tenure with the orchestra in front of an audience of over 60,000. Stein has also performed with Branford Marsalis in the Philadelphia Big Brass Ensemble. He has performed under the direction of Pierre Boulez, Bernard Haitink, Issa-Pekka Solonen, David Robertson, and others. As an educator, he's been on the faculty with the El Sistema-based Chicago Yours Project and has his own private studio. He has also taught trombone at the Boston University Tanglewood Institute. Jason received his Bachelor of Music degree from Boston University, and he completed his Master of Music degree at Northwestern. He is principal trombone with the Northeastern Pennsylvania Philharmonic, as well as the orchestra's librarian and personnel manager. We had a chance to speak by phone with Jason Stein about his love of the trombone and all the music he and the other Philharmonic musicians will be making this week.
The trombone kind of found me. I mean, my very first instrument actually was the organ and the piano. I did play those things. But trombone found me when all the way back in fourth grade. And, you know, I remember the teacher passing around a form and saying, pick three instruments you want to play. And I wrote down trumpet, saxophone, and drums, like pretty much every other kid in the classroom. And because I was the tallest kid in the class and the only kid that could reach out all the way to seventh position on the slide, they just gave me the trombone. And I was just so happy to have an instrument to play. You know, it just kind of stuck with me. And, of course, there's a thing about trombone players, their goofy personalities, and that's kind of how I am. And I've been doing it ever since, and it's been a blessing to be able to do it as a career.
And you teach, too, which is really terrific, so that you can pass on your love of it and your knowledge of it, because it can't be an easy instrument to play.
No, it's not. But, yes, I do teach. I do have students. Currently I'm teaching at Haverford College, and I also have some private students. And, you know, it's enjoyable to be able to pass on the knowledge that I've learned over the last 25 years of playing trombone to my students and then seeing them succeed. I've sent a few of my high school students on to music conservatories, and then just being able to watch them flourish and succeed and turn into beautiful players, it's pretty special to see them so happy doing what I'm doing. So I definitely love passing on that knowledge.
Can you be a part-time solo trombonist? Is there enough literature there? We have something by Frumière we sometimes play. We have David, maybe.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. You know, trombonists are not often asked to get up in front of the orchestra or the band and play solos. It's always a special moment when we do because it's, as I said, it's not something we get to do often. So we get to enjoy the spotlight there. But most of the time you see us sitting in the back of the orchestra, which we also enjoy playing some of the great pieces in the orchestral repertoire. I mean, next season we're doing Gustav Holst's The Planets, which in its own right has many soloistic moments for the trombone in it. But, I mean, I've gotten to play a number of major concertos with orchestras, the Henry Tomasi Concerto. I've played the David Trombone Concerto before with orchestra. And it's a special thing to be able to do, and to be able to do it in front of all your colleagues. It can be nerve-wracking, I can promise you that, of course. But it is a lot of fun, and even though we don't get to do it a lot, every time it happens, it's always a joy to be able to do it.
You all are about to perform a wide range of music in different settings, a library, a park along the riverbank, downtown Scranton, a wonderful location in the woods in Hawley. Does your role as a trombonist change from those various settings? For example, the full-fledged orchestra in Scranton when you're going to do 1812 and all the great things that we think of, down to the Americana brass program that you'll be doing at Hawley. Is your role in the ensemble different to a certain degree?
Most definitely. You know, playing in the big orchestra, you know, we have a lot of musicians on stage for the Scranton concert on the 3rd in the evening for the July 4th series. I think we have 40 musicians that are going to be on stage, whereas, you know, something like what we're doing in the Valley Community Library, the brass trio, we have only three, just me and two other brass players, or the brass quintet on July 5th, there's only five. So one major difference is that we don't have a conductor in those small groups, and we get to be our own conductors. So it's actually kind of nice not to have somebody up there waving their arms at you, which forces us to listen more with our ears and to watch each other more. In a lot of ways, I think it just helps us to get even more connected and into the music that we're playing. Not saying that I'm not that way in the orchestra. It's just a little bit different because there's just so many folks involved with the conductor in front kind of helping to lead us through it. But I really enjoy the connections that I have with the other musicians when I'm playing in a small chamber group to be able to make music together. It's just, especially in a small intimate setting with folks, it's a really nice thing. And of course, on top of that, I'm also personnel manager. On top of all of this, I have to worry about a lot of other non-musical things too, which adds interesting difficulties to it. But certainly the size of the ensemble definitely changes the perspective of how I'm playing in each group, absolutely.
And is the smaller group, say the quintet, for example, when we refer to what you're doing there as chamber music, we might think of string quartets and so forth, but is it also like a jazz ensemble too, in terms of that sense of listening?
Yeah, or if you think of a string quartet, the genre I don't think necessarily matters, although we'll be playing a lot of jazz style music. The fact that, you know, there's not literally a conductor staying there, we are in charge of what's happening on stage, the five of us, which is forcing us to we have to listen to every phrase that every musician's playing. I know if one person decides to play a phrase a certain way, the next time that phrase comes around, the next person has to follow exactly how it's played. And not to mention it's got to be in time and together. So there's a little bit more difficulty with playing in that smaller group, but I think that adds to the excitement of it. And playing jazz is certainly, as a brass player, that's one of the exciting genres that we really get to enjoy a lot in doing. And it works so well, especially in a brass quintet. It works really well, I think. Doesn't always have to be a big band that does it.
And we think back to Origins. Maybe we have images in our minds of sack butts and things like that. And maybe being outdoors, Mozart serenades and all that sort of thing. But you guys are primed for playing outdoors, as you'll be doing this week.
Yeah, I mean, way back in the day, way back in the day, our instruments were basically used to tell people where to go on the battlefield. I mean, they were like literally giving instructions on what to do. But yeah, I mean, our instruments are louder than string instruments. They were meant to be used with the military, and that's kind of how they're designed, with the flare, the bell-shaped flare on our instrument really helps to project the sound. You know, we don't need a microphone all the time like some of our string friends. But playing outside, I mean, it's something we've been doing for hundreds of years. You're right, they're back to the days of the sackbut back in the Renaissance days, when they were using more of the trumpets and stuff, announcing the king's arrival and such, so to speak. But yes, we love to play outside as long as it's not 100 degrees.
Also, what about the fact that you're going to be playing a lot this weekend? You all. Are your lips and everything, is it an assault to play so much, so close together?
I'm not going to lie to you. It will be a challenge to get through this weekend. And we can't just think about this weekend, because all of the musicians in our orchestra play in other places and will have other jobs leading into this. Those 3 days are going to be challenging, especially for the brass players, because we do get tired. You know, our lips will wear down. But I like to think that we're all professionals and we know how to pace ourselves. So we'll be very careful to not overplay and to do our best that we'll get through it. And I think we will. And hopefully you will not notice by the end that we're tired. But we will be tired, for sure.
Yeah. So anything coming up on any of these programs that you particularly would mention, as Ellington writes beautifully for the trombone here, or Stars and Stripes, heavens, could Sousa write for the trombone? Tchaikovsky and the trombones.
Well, you just mentioned it. I mean, I'll try to pick a few things from each of the big concerts we're doing. In Scranton on July 3rd, you just said at Tchaikovsky, we end that performance with the 1812 Overture. And there's some big, big moments for the trombone on that piece. And, you know, I know it's something that we often play around this time. I mean, just because it's bombastic and it's patriotic. But because of that, Tchaikovsky wrote for the trombone. I mean, it has some heavy-duty moments in there that are always fun for us to play. July 4th in Wilkes-Barre, Kirby Park, I mean, it's a brass and percussion ensemble playing. So if you're a big brass fan, you're going to love it. It's hard for me to pick one moment from that concert, but we're doing an arrangement of the Gershwin American in Paris, which is originally written for full orchestra. And we're obviously playing in a much smaller group, and it's difficult because we're missing so many instruments, but the arranger did a terrific job, and there's just a lot of really challenging moments in there that it's just such a beautiful piece and such beautiful music. We love to do it. And then July 5th at Harmony in the Woods, when we're doing the quintet, there's going to be a lot of trombone features on there. We're doing Duke Ellington. We're going to be doing some more Gershwin. Darren Kelly, who's one of the trumpet players in the quintet, wrote some pieces that also feature trombone. So it's hard for me to choose on that concert. I'm going to be working quite a bit, and I'm hoping I have my chops, at least some chops left over by the end of that one. But I'm going to be featured quite a bit this weekend, so please send your positive vibes my way. Make it through.
When you do these educational outreach programs, like the one you'll be doing in Peckville with the little ones, what do they think when they see the trombone, and then when they hear it?
They usually, when the really young ones point to my instrument, a lot of times they will say the trumpet. That's something that's maybe more common to them at that age. And then I explain to them, no, this is the trombone, but it's different because it's a little bit bigger and it has a slide. And then when they see the slide, their eyes just get big because they've never seen anything that long and move like that. And then they get excited, and then they want to come up, and they want to touch it, they want to play it, which I will, of course, let them do. And then they hear the sound, and they just get so excited. But just hearing the trombone play just opens their eyes so big. So that's why I'm excited to do this Ben's Trumpet story with the live brass trio that we're doing on July 3rd in the morning at 10. The kids that see that concert, I mean, they just go nuts. They love to hear the music that we play. Darren Kelly, who I mentioned earlier, has arranged some jazz pieces that we play with that story. And Nancy Sanderson, our executive director that just retired, reads the story to the kids. And they just go nuts because the music that goes with the story is just so fun. And they love it. And I just hope that it encourages them to want to play trombone, or they can play trumpet, they can play tuba, French horn, whatever they want when they grow up.
How long have you been with the Philharmonic?
I have been with the Philharmonic since, probably on a full-time basis, 2018. I subbed with the orchestra a few years prior to that. I started as the music librarian. I'm basically in charge of putting all of the music together for the season and making sure that it all gets out on the stands and doing the bowings for the string players and then collecting it all at the end of the concert. And I also play principal in the orchestra. I started the personnel manager job right after COVID in 2020, which was very interesting. But we got through that just fine. And so I do quite a bit with the Philharmonic. I wear several hats, but I love doing it. You know, I love that area. My wife grew up in Nanticoke, as I mentioned. And just my relationship with Nancy Sanderson, I've known her for 25 years. I actually decided to become a trombone player professionally because of going to her camp at Performing Arts Institute at Wyoming Seminary when I was in high school. And, you know, it just feels like family when I'm with the Philharmonic and when we are up in that area. And I just love it. I just love it.
Well, we get that sense if we're around you all somehow when you're playing or doing community outreach. We just get that sense that you really do care about each other in that way.
We do, and I know it's a job, but it doesn't feel like a job. I mean, it's fun. It's fun to share music with the community, and, you know, it's important for us that we have people to play for, and it makes us even happier when people are enjoying the music that we're making, and that's really why I do it.
You all at the Philharmonic got through the COVID pandemic doing a great deal online, and you gave people online ways to connect with the orchestra and music. We learned some lessons here at WVIA Radio as well about the importance of keeping music on the radio in times that are stressful. People seem to be seeking out some sort of either solace or excitement, not diversion, but just some sort of sometimes soul-touching moments through music. So it's an important part of our lives. It's not extra.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, whatever you would like to call it, an escape, but music, for me, I get emotional when I play it and when I hear it. And I'm going to, many times, my happy place when I'm there. I mean, I forget what's going on in the world or what my issues at home or whatever I'm having to worry about. And I'm just fully focused on the emotion that's coming from that music, whether it's happy music or sad music. But it's really a healthy thing for us to do because I think music is like the universal language. It brings us all together. And I think this weekend coming up is going to be able to do that as we celebrate July 4th together in a patriotic way. And a lot of exciting music that will help to do that.